To the best of our knowledge, is partnering with the radio show Israel Story, or Sipur Israeli. It's an Israeli version of This American Life. It's one of the most popular radio shows in Israel, and we've been collaborating with them on some radio pieces. So today, the show's co-founder and host, Mishi Harman, along with journalist Maddie Friedman, brings us the story of another kind of magic book.
There's one book, an ancient one, more than 1,000 years old, which stands at the center of one of the most fascinating mysteries in Jewish history. Over the centuries, this book was concealed, venerated, pillaged, salvaged, smuggled, made to disappear, and miraculously appear once more. That book is the Aleppo Codex. Today, part of it is displayed as a national treasure in Jerusalem. And part of it is a kind of holy grail sought worldwide by professors, rabbis, spies, and collectors. Together, these people, enthralled by the magic of this codex and its story, make up a sort of underground society. For them, this book is much more than just a book. Matti Friedman encountered them completely by chance.
It was the summer of 2008. I was a reporter here in Jerusalem, and I was kept busy covering the endless routine of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but I was desperate to write about something else, about anything else. One day I was at the Shrine of the Book in Jerusalem at Israel's National Museum, which is where the Dead Sea Scrolls are kept. Everyone knows the Dead Sea Scrolls. They're celebrities. They're the Beyoncé of ancient Hebrew manuscripts. The Scrolls Gallery was full of tourists who were looking at these 2,000-year-old fragments of parchment. A flight of stairs led down from that gallery into a dark room. It was essentially a basement, and it was empty. And there I encountered another book. And from the labels, I understood that this was the singular, perfect copy of the Hebrew Bible, probably Judaism's most important manuscript. And it was one of the most important and valuable books on earth, but I had never heard of it. That gap between its importance and its anonymity seemed to me to be worth exploring.
Adolfo Reutmann is the museum curator in charge of the Codex.
The magic of the Aleppo Codex is that this manuscript is the most significant traditional version of the Hebrew Bible. You know, it's a kind of metaphor of the presence of God on earth. It's the word of God, and the book itself was revered by Jews for centuries, seeing this book as the real presence of God.
So what does being the perfect version of the Hebrew Bible even mean?
Well, take a religious institution like the Catholic Church, for example. The church is held together by a central office, which is called the Vatican, and it's in Rome, and it sets doctrine and appoints clergy, and it runs the church. But Judaism never had anything like that. And after the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem in 70 AD and the beginning of the exile, there was very little holding these diaspora communities together. For a people, dispersion had always meant extinction. And if the Jews were going to be an exception, and they very much wanted to be an exception, they needed a mechanism that would allow them to somehow stay one people, even though they were now speaking different languages and they were answering to different kings. And the mechanism needed to be portable because they were now moving around the world. And what they came up with was the idea that a people could be held together by words. They would have a book that they would all read. And this book is the collection of texts that we know as the Hebrew Bible. But the mechanism only works if they're all reading exactly the same book, because any variations would quickly lead to fragmentation, to religious schism. So you need an agreed upon master copy, a kind of atomic clock of Judaism. And that is the Aleppo Codex, the authoritative version of the Bible.
The Codex was written around 930 AD on the shores of the Sea of Galilee. After that, it was moved to Jerusalem, seized by the soldiers of the First Crusade, and then ransomed by the Jews of Cairo. In Cairo, it was actually the personal Bible used by the great Jewish philosopher and physician Moses Maimonides. A few generations later, it traveled from Cairo north to Aleppo, a trading center in Syria, where it became the treasured possession of the city's Jewish community. It remained there, hidden in the great synagogue in a safe with two locks for 600 years. Rina Sutton, who lives in Israel and is now in her 80s, still remembers the mystique around the Codex.
בחגים היו מוציאים את הכתר, או אם היה בר מצווה או משהו כזה, During the holidays, or on special occasions like bar mitzvahs, they would take the codex out of its garrotto and parade it among the congregants, and everyone lined up to kiss it because it had power. If a woman was trying to get pregnant, she'd get close and touch it. Anyone with a special request would come near.
The Jews of Aleppo came to believe that the book protected their community. It was their talisman. Here's Rina's husband, Rafi, also from Aleppo.
Many legends and beliefs got tied up with the book. If it were ever moved, if it ever left Aleppo, a horrible plague would strike the community. Leprosy, or even worse, total destruction. All kinds of dark things.
So this all sounds kind of dramatic, but it's pretty close to what ended up happening. Today, there are no Jews left in Aleppo. It's the largest city in Syria, a major battlefield between Assad's government and the rebel forces. And it makes you wonder what would have happened if the Codex were still there. Books, after all, don't fare well in wars.
Egypt? No. Soviet Union? Yes. United Kingdom? Abstain. The United States? Yes.
On November 29, 1947, the United Nations voted on the partition of the British Mandate in Palestine into two states, one for the Arabs and one for the Jews. The next day, riots erupted in Aleppo. A mob burned Jewish homes and businesses, and also the Great Synagogue, where the Codex was kept. The book disappeared. And most people thought that it was lost for good. But 10 years later, Mati explains, it resurfaced in mysterious circumstances, this time in Jerusalem, in the new state of Israel.
It turned out that the Codex had actually survived. It had been hidden first by a Christian merchant and then by a Jewish merchant in the old Aleppo Bazaar before it was smuggled out of Syria by a Jewish family who hid it in their washing machine. It reached Turkey, and then it traveled by sea to Haifa, which is an Israeli port, and from there to Jerusalem in early 1958. It ended up in an important academic institute called the Ben Tzvi Institute, which was founded by Israel's second president, Yitzhak Ben Tzvi, who was also a scholar and, I guess you could say, an early member of the Aleppo Codex Underground. He had been obsessed with the book since the 1930s, and he had done everything in his power to bring it to Jerusalem, including a failed attempt a few years earlier to use the Mossad to smuggle it out of Syria. Now, in 1958, he finally got his wish. He had the book. When the Codex arrived in Jerusalem, two questions arose. One was, who owned Judaism's greatest book? Was it the community that had cherished it and cared for it for 600 years? Or was it the new state of Israel? And that question became the subject of a fascinating legal battle that was fought in a court in Jerusalem over 4 years. But the second question is the one that preoccupies the Aleppo Codex Underground to this day. When the book was written more than 1,000 years earlier, it had about 500 pages. But when it turned up in Jerusalem, it had only 294 pages. So about 40% was missing. And the pages that were gone weren't just any pages. They included the Torah, the 5 books of Moses, which is the most important part of any Hebrew Bible manuscript. And there were other books missing as well, like Daniel, Esther, and a few others.
So what did people think had happened?
Well, the accepted belief was that the pages had been lost in the fire in the Great Synagogue in 1947. The physical appearance of the Codex seemed to support that idea because on the bottom outer corner of each page, there is a purplish discoloration that looks like a burn mark. So for years, people just assumed that that was what happened, and it was convenient because if the pages had been burned, you didn't have to look for them. But in 1986, the book was sent for restoration, and a manuscript expert took a close look at these burn marks, and he sent samples to a microbiology lab. And when the slides came back, the expert told me he literally jumped out of his chair because the slides showed clearly that the purple marks weren't burn marks. They were fungus. And in fact, there was no evidence at all that the Codex had ever been damaged by fire.
If they hadn't been destroyed in a fire, where were the missing pages? They had immense value to collectors, to Aleppo exiles, and to scholars. And because there are no known copies or photographs of the Codex, the absence of the pages means that the original perfect text of the Bible can't be recreated. In the 1980s, two fragments surfaced, a page from the Book of Chronicles, and a fragment from Exodus with a few passages describing the plague of frogs which God sent to afflict Pharaoh and the Egyptians. Both fragments were found in, of all places, Brooklyn, New York, where they were held by Aleppo Jews who had immigrated to the U.S., and who believed that the pages of the Codex had the power to protect them against the evil eye. At first, researchers were really excited. They hoped that the discovery of these pages would lead to the rest of the missing pieces, but they never did. More than 200 pages remain missing. Since then, nothing else has ever turned up. The mystery continues, and that is where the Aleppo Codex Underground comes in.
Early in my research, I found myself sitting in the living room of an 80-year-old ex-Mossad agent named Rafi Sutton. He was born in Aleppo and escaped to Israel as a teenager. He knew I was looking for information about the Aleppo Codex, and I knew that he had been investigating the story for years. So he puts an enormous file folder on his coffee table, and then he looks at me. I was thrilled because for a reporter, a folder full of yellowing documents is like a juicy hamburger in front of a starving man. But it soon became clear to me that he had no intention of actually letting me see what was inside the folder. This was a guy whose profession was trading in information and secrets. He spent time abroad undercover. He had run agents in the Jordanian sector of Jerusalem in the 50s. And spies like that don't just give information away. And I think that was my first introduction to the underground. Another key figure is a guy named Ezra Kassin, who's in his 40s. He did his military service as a young man, as a detective in the military police, and later ran a center for the study of Kabbalah, of Jewish mysticism. And he can describe the great synagogue of Aleppo in meticulous detail.
אני פונה שמאלה, יורד כמה מדרגות, מולי השער הראשי של בית הכנסת.
I turn left, go down a flight of stairs, and now I'm standing in front of the main gate of the synagogue, and I can already feel the sanctity, a sense of awe completely engulfing me. There's like an inner trembling and excitement, a sense that I'm in the midst of heightened spiritual ecstasy. I push the really heavy, huge wooden doors. The hinges creak, the door opens, and I enter. Now, I find myself walking down a long corridor leading to a small grotto where the Holy Codex is kept. It's the object of our prayers, the ancient and holy treasure of our community.
What's amazing is that Ezra is describing a place that he has never seen. He was born in Israel, years after the Codex arrived from Syria. His home is packed with binders of material on the Codex that he's collected, and his wife, who I also got to know over the years that I worked on this book, she knows that she has to share her home with Ezra's other true love. Ezra probably has more information on the Codex than anyone else alive. But as was the case with Rafi, the first time I met him, I got nowhere. He would say things like, you know, Mati, one wrong word to someone in this story and 10 other doors will slam shut. And then he would kind of look at me with a sly grin and he wouldn't say anything more.
So was this frustrating to you?
It was, but it also tipped me off to the existence of a good story that was being concealed. And after a few months of persistence, the doors cracked open.
Slowly, Mati gained more trust as he began to become a part of the underground himself. He learned that there were significant cracks in the official story.
Rafi Sutton, the retired spy, found an elderly rabbi from Aleppo who was by then living in Buenos Aires, and he turned out to be a very reliable witness. The rabbi told him explicitly on camera that he had seen the manuscript whole in 1952. That's 5 years after the riot in Aleppo and the fire in the synagogue, which is when the pieces were supposed to have gone missing. But the rabbi said, no, that was not what happened at all.
What that meant was that the pages went missing sometime after the rabbi saw them, and there weren't that many options. Either when the book was being guarded in hiding by the Jews of Aleppo, or in transit through Turkey, or, and this was the most explosive potential conclusion, after it reached Israel and was being held by the scholars of the President's Institute.
One of my first questions was, when was the first time someone wrote down which pages were missing? And I thought this would be easy to find out, but of course, like everything with the Codex, it turned out not to be. After spending a lot of time in archives, I realized that no one had noted how much was missing or that the Torah was missing before March 1958, which is a decade after the fire, and it's after the codex arrived in the hands of the president. I also started finding evidence that there were other valuable books missing from the collection at the same institute. The academics, who are the custodians of the codex today and who I at first saw as neutral observers who I could consult with about this very complicated story, they clammed up and eventually refused to cooperate or provide me with documents that I requested, even when I filed a request under Israel's Freedom of Information Act.
But why was that, Mati?
That'll take a long time to answer. Their refusal, of course, made me more curious. And by this time, I thought of myself as a member of the Aleppo Codex Underground, and I would meet Ezra or Rafi or some of the others, and we would trade secrets and fragments of information.
I asked Mati what he thinks it is about the Codex that sparks this kind of obsession. Jews have a long love affair with books. They aren't known as the people of the book for nothing. Texts were the way Jews maintained their identity over centuries in the diaspora. And there has traditionally been a deep regard for words. For example, when a Torah scroll is taken out in a synagogue, the congregation stands up on their feet like you would stand up when a judge enters the courtroom. And the scrolls often are decorated with a silver crown as if they were some sort of royalty. But Mati actually thinks that there's something even deeper going on here.
There's a central idea in Jewish mysticism that the world was once whole and that it then shattered into many fragments. And the universe is broken and it needs to be put back together, and we do this by our good deeds. And the end of the process is redemption. I love the idea that is taught by many mystical traditions over the centuries and millennia that the journey is actually the point. The journey is as important as the destination. It's not coincidence that Ezra Kassin of the Aleppo Codex Underground is also a scholar of Kabbalah, which is the mystic tradition. Because in this story, you have the meeting of these two Jewish preoccupations, the desire to make things whole and the love for the written word. It's an attempt to collect missing pieces, the pieces of a book. And I think that the idea here, consciously or not, is that if we put the Aleppo Codex back together, we'll actually be restoring something much, much greater.
Mishi Harman is the co-founder and host of the radio show Israel Story. And journalist Mati Friedman is the author of the Aleppo Codex, in pursuit of one of the world's most coveted, sacred, and mysterious books.